Happy almost New Year, right? How was Christmas? Good? It's almost a New Year, hence. Yes, you're right. Interesting. Okay, yep. You guys are already fired up, and I like that because, you know, we're going to have some interaction today, and I was worried that maybe you wouldn't interact, and it's going to be just fine, I can tell. So good. Anybody have any plans, you know? Parties to go to for New Year's Eve? Yeah. Some sports to watch, maybe. Anybody care? Not really. A couple of you? No. Yes. Yes and no. Okay. Sleeping in? Right. Hey. Yes. Okay. January 1 is such an interesting thing to me. The idea of a new year is interesting because, on the one hand, January 1st is like any other day. It is like any other 24-hour period. It's just a day, right? Just a day. And yet, even the most cynical among us would probably admit that there is something different about January 1st, that something comes with it that doesn't usually come with other days in the year, and that something else is hope, right? Even the most cynical among us who've given up on resolutions decades ago, like, right, we're done with that. There's still something about a new year. Hope abounds. And so this Sunday and next Sunday, as we span a new year, I want to invite you in joining me in considering what the scriptures say about hope, and what they say about newness, and what they say about possibility. Because what the scriptures tell us is that who you are today is not who you will end up being. Who you are today is not who you will end up being. Or to put it another way, God is not done with you yet. This is the hope we have, at least in part. It's not the only hope we have, but it is part of the hope that we have, that God has been transforming you, is, even in this very moment, if you are open, transforming you, and will continue to transform you until that day when you are made fully and completely into the likeness of Jesus Christ. That is what God is determined to do in you, is make you new. And for that reason, we have incredible hope. I want to talk about that today. You guys up for it? If you're up for it, okay, good. Thanks, Ruby. Appreciate it. How about anyone else? Anyone else up for it? No? Yes, maybe. Well, we're going there anyway. John 1. If you want to grab a Bible. John is the fourth book in the New Testament. So hard for little kids to know when I'm asking a question, I want a response or not, right? Like I'm asking a question, so I'm going to tell you what I think. That's coming, guys. That was rhetorical, however, just a moment ago. We'll talk about that at lunch. And so, yeah, just my children, Dan. Just mine. I can only handle those. All right, so John 1, which is a passage about Jesus, even though you never find his name here. Because Jesus is referred to in John 1 as the Word of God. And at first, in these first few verses that we'll read here in just a moment, it's all about who Jesus is and what his coming means. And then we get down towards the end where we'll finish in like 11, 12, and 13. And we start to get, I think, a picture of the hope that we have. So let's start John 1. Verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, was Jesus. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Have some fun with that theology for a while. I mean, that'll keep you busy. You know, that is some deep stuff there in verse 1 and 2. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all humankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world. And though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own. In other words, Jesus came to the Jewish people, his own people, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a person's will, but born of God. All right, so someone tell me, how do you spell the word hope? Anyone? Go for it. You, Luke, did you not raise? No? Okay, no. Okay, pass. He's passing. Like, Solomon, hit it. Hit it. H-O-P-E, that is correct. Hope is spelled H-O-P-E, except in this passage. I want to suggest to you that hope is spelled B-O-R-N. B-O-R-N. I know it. This is going to take some rewiring this morning. All right? I want to suggest to you that hope is spelled born. Because the hope in this passage, the hope for us, is that in Jesus we will be reborn. Born again. There will be a rebirth of our lives, of our minds, of our very souls. In all the ways that matter, we will be made new. Now, friends, I can tell you I've witnessed the births of four people. I'm not sure that there's a moment in the human experience more full of possibility and potential and hope than the birth of a child. And if you've never been at the birth of a child, that's okay. Maybe you've held a newborn. Maybe you've just smelled a newborn. Even something about their smell gives you hope, you know. There's something in the newness of it that speaks to the hope that's found when someone is B-O-R-N, born. Hope is spelled born, B-O-R-N. And what we're going to do this morning is we're going to take each of those letters, because, of course, this word born is found in verse 12 and 13. And we're going to do a little acrostic. Is that what it's called? Yeah, acronym, something. Okay, we're going to use that as our framework. So here's what we're going to do. B stands for believe. What does it mean to be born? Well, it means to believe. And these are all coming, by the way, right out of verses 12 and 13. So I'm not making this up. If you want to know what it means to be born anew, to have a rebirth in life, the scriptures tell us right here. And it starts with believe. Now, believe means to have confidence in someone or something. So verse 12 is telling us that we experience a rebirth, we are made new, hope abounds when we have confidence in Jesus, when we believe in him. And here's one thing that as I was thinking about these verses and about belief and confidence that struck me. Confidence in someone, when you're thinking about having confidence in them in the future, it's built on the past. More often than not, confidence in someone in the future is built on the past. Let me give you a couple of examples. I have confidence in my wife in ways that I have confidence in no one else. I am confident that she will be there for me when I am in need. I am confident that she will love me despite knowing all of the dark places of who I am. I'm confident that she will be compassionate when I'm hurting. And the reason I'm confident in her as I look ahead to what life might hold is because I'm able to look back and see 15 years of compassion and trust and faithfulness, right? You look back and it gives you confidence for the future. Kids, how many of you think that you're going to eat lunch when you get home? Anybody? Dinner. How many of you will eat dinner when you get home today? At some point, later on today, yeah? Man, I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy. How do you know that, though? Why do you have confidence? Okay, yeah. You have food in your refrigerator. Yep. How'd that food get there? Buy it or grow a crop, but how did food get in your refrigerator, Caleb? Did the store bring groceries to your refrigerator? Okay. Your parents did. Yes, your parents went and bought. Now, who's been filling your refrigerator over these years? Okay, right. So, Dad. Mostly Dad, apparently. Okay, good. No, Mom now. We have a family dispute. I'm not sure which. Regardless, your refrigerator, I'm going to move over here so you can just hit the pause button. You know, the refrigerator is full because someone in your life has been filling it. And so you can be confident going ahead that you're going to eat because you can look back and see all of the times that you've had food that you needed, right? We have confidence in the future because of the past. Let me give you an opposite example. The Lions play today. Right, no faith in the Lions. Why not, Caleb? It's self-explanatory, isn't it? When was the last time they won at Lambeau Field, which is where they're playing today? 1991. There's a Packer fan. There's a Packer fan right there. She knows. Okay. So you guys weren't even born yet. You weren't even a thought of being born yet. And the Lions, that's how long ago they won at this particular place. It's where they play today if you're not a football fan, you know. And so I am trying to be confident in the Lions today. But when I look back, I don't have much reason to be confident based on the past. Right? Okay. So what does verse 12 tell us? What does verse 12 tell us? That it does not tell us, Matt. I'm afraid. It tells us that those who believe in Jesus, in other words, those who have confidence in Him, are reborn. And with that newness comes hope. Think about it this way. If you are completely confident in God's provision in your life, you have no doubt, you believe deeply and strongly that God is always going to take care of you, that then opens up the future. Right? The future is open if you are confident in God's provision, because you're able to take risk, head into new territory, try new things, ask risky questions, because you know that God will be faithful to you. If, on the other hand, you are not sure if God will provide, if God is worthy of trust, if you can have confidence in God, then what happens to the future? It closes up. Hope dwindles, because every moment you've got to be wondering if you'll have enough, what tomorrow might bring. It might shake the whole thing to the ground. You see how confidence in someone, in Jesus, leads to hope? So how do we deepen our confidence in Christ? Having confidence in the future is built on the past. Here's what I want to invite you to do for a couple minutes, okay? Grab a piece of paper, grab your phone, write a little, you know, write it on it on your phone, on a note. We have paper up here if you need some. You can do this in your head too, but sometimes it's helpful to actually write this down. 2 minutes, not terribly long. I just want to invite you to think back on the past and list the ways in which you have seen God be faithful to you. Reasons, as you look back, that you would have to be confident in God today and in the future. Okay? So look back, and by the way, don't just think about huge, grand, epic moments. Think about everyday moments. God's provision of food in the refrigerator. God's provision of a job. God's provision of good relationships that bring life to you. Just quick, write as many things as you can that tell of God's past faithfulness and goodness to you. Ready? Go. Excellent. Glad to hear it. There is, when you read the Old Testament, it's really interesting, especially in the Psalms. There are so many times when the Bible tells the people of Israel, when the scriptures tell the people of Israel, remember what God has done. Look back. Recall. Tell people. Tell the next generation what God has done. I believe that one of the reasons why this is like a consistent command in the scriptures is because when we look back, it helps grow our belief. When you look back and remember what God has done, it helps you move forward into the future with confidence. Not in yourself, but in the God who's with you. So this is such a simple exercise. I don't know that I do it nearly enough, though. Maybe you don't either. This could be something to take with you into the new year. Become a person who has confidence in Jesus because you're able to look back and see all the ways that he's been faithful to you. All right. So hope is spelled B-O-R-N. B is for believe. The next letter is an O. And in verse 12, we read this. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Which means that we are orphans no more. For me, this is one of the most profound truths that the Scriptures declare to us. That we are children of God. You are a child of God. And there's so many different things we could talk about and think about around this metaphor, but I just want to consider one this morning, and it's this. Being a child of God means that you and I no longer need to prove our worth or identity. Being a child of God means that you and I no longer have to prove our worth or our identity. Elena, can I ask you a question? How old are you? Eight years old. And what's your last name? Burkike, I thought so. Good. I've heard of some Burkikes, and here they're pretty good people. So 8 years old, you've been a Burkike. So have you been a Burkike your whole life? Yeah, you have. Here's my question. What test did you have to take to become a Burkike? Did you have to pass a test to get into this family? You did not. Interesting. Did you have to run a gauntlet, an obstacle course, to get into the family as a baby? You did not. No. That happens at 10. Excellent. Okay, so you're almost there. Yep, in like phase two of the Burkike family. So, I mean, what did you do to become a part of the family that you're in? Nothing. Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? You didn't have to do anything. You are a child of Jeff and Sarah, and you always will be, and you didn't earn it, and it can't be taken away from you. You will always have that as part of your identity. You see where I'm going here, right? We are children of God. We did not do anything to earn it. We didn't have to take a test. We didn't have to run the gauntlet. And there is nothing that we can do to have that part of our identity removed from us. We are and always will be children of the King. Unfortunately, we forget this, and we often live like orphans. In other words, what I mean by that is that we think that maybe we have to prove ourselves in order to become a child, in order to have a place in God's family. Or we tiptoe through life worried that if we just mess up, we're one mistake away from being kicked out of the family. But this passage and countless others like it declare that we are orphans no more. And the more that that can take root in our heart, the more that hope abounds. Think about earthly families for a moment. We all come from one, all right? Maybe some of you grew up in a family where you had to prove your worth. You had to prove or earn your parents' respect. That is a really tough way to live. Or it's really tough to go through life scared that if you mess up, if you cross this line, you'll be kicked out of the family. Your position, your place, your belonging in it is always kind of at risk, right? If that is the kind of upbringing that a person experiences, if that's what family means to them, guess what happens to their future? Same thing we talked about earlier. Because if your place, your spot in the family, whether or not you belong, is always in jeopardy or always potentially at risk, there's no space to dream and hope anymore. But if your place in the family is secure, if Zeke knows that he is a DeBlay his whole life, and if he makes mistakes, there are consequences, right? But his identity is never in jeopardy. He will always be a child of Chris and Bethany. Always. He will always be a DeBlay, always a part of our family, always have a place to belong. That never changes. Then you know what? Zeke now has a place from which he can dream and risk and try new things and adventure out, because he knows that at the end of the day, he has a home. He has a family. Same thing is true in our relationship with God. When we rest in our identity as children of God, the future opens up to us. And hope is renewed. So let me ask you this question. What do you believe about your place in God's family? What do you believe about your place in God's family? Maybe a simple thing to do today would be to take your name, if you got a still pen and a piece of paper, write your name down, put an equal sign, and then put child of God. And just reflect on that reality. If you took that into the new year in these next couple of days, it may be a really important step. You are a child of God, and that identity cannot be taken away from you. Do you believe that? Do you rest in that? Do you operate out of that identity? See, we're reborn when we do. We're reborn when we believe, when we have confidence in Jesus. We're reborn when we rest in the fact that we are orphans no more. And we are reborn when we receive. And this is in verse 13 as well. Verse 12, pardon me. We read it here. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Ruby, would you help me with this next part? I need your help. Come here. I want to show everybody what this word receive means. And I think it's something that's best demonstrated. Stand up here for me. All right. To receive someone comes from a Greek word, lambano. Okay. And I'll tell you what it means in just a second. But again, I want to just show. Ready, set, go. This is lambano. Okay. Grabbing a hold of someone and not letting go. Thanks. That's lambano. So, to receive Jesus is to have open arms and to then grab a hold of. Take hold of him. The believe is a very kind of, I think, thing that we do with our mind, maybe, in our heart. Perhaps this word, receive, lambano, has more physicality to it. Right? To grab a hold of Jesus, I think, has really everyday practical implications. It's actually my question to you. What would it look like for you to grab a hold of Jesus? It's actually not an easy question, I don't think. What would that look like for you? Let me give you a couple of possibilities that might spark something for you, all right? What if you were to grab a hold of Jesus' priorities by taking a look at this, at your calendar. And just asking yourself, as you get ready to start a new year, what is on it? Are there things that need to be taken off? Are there things that need to be added to it in order to embrace Jesus' priorities, his way of life? Okay? So there's maybe a practical way to grab a hold of who Jesus is. Another one might be very practical. I don't know how you would not include this, to grab your checkbook. Does anybody use a checkbook anymore? No, probably not. You know, to look, you do, someone over there? I don't. But to look at your statements, you know, your money, your income, and to ask yourself, are you, as you look at where your money is going, does it reflect that you have embraced and grabbed a hold of Jesus? And if not, what might need to change? One thing that I've been thinking a fair amount and been having some conversations with people the last couple of days is around the scriptures. And the reality that today, less people know the Bible than have in America in a very, very long time. We do not know the scriptures anymore, not the way that perhaps our ancestors, our grandparents, our parents even did know them. And the one thing about the scriptures that I think might help us embrace Jesus more is that the scriptures are one way that we learn of the truth of God and the truth of ourselves. And so maybe one way to embrace Jesus today is to embrace his truth by maybe looking at your calendar and spending some time, maybe more consistently than you currently do, studying and reflecting on what the scriptures say about who you are and who God is. I don't know if any of those ideas spark others for you, but what would it look like practically for you to grab a hold of Jesus in this new year? When we do grab on, hope abounds. We are reborn when we believe, when we rest in the truth that we are orphans no more, when we receive, hang on tight to who Jesus is. And then finally, we are reborn when we remember that we are not on our own. Listen to verse 12 and 13 again. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, orphans no more, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or a person's will, but born of God. Just about every day I run into someone who wants to be reborn in some part of their life. You may not know this, but my other job is working with people who are trying to make changes around their lifestyle, their physical well-being, right? And so in that job or here at the branch or just talking with my kids, I'm consistently meeting people who want to experience a new birth, who want to have the transformation that God promises. And the going wisdom in our world, the default response when we sense the desire to become something new, what we tend to do is tell ourselves that it's time to get to work because it's on us, right? What is a New Year's resolution? It is you deciding to roll your sleeves up and make a change in your life. And yet what I've found is that whether you're talking about losing a couple pounds or becoming a person of greater generosity, when you try and do it on your own, it rarely, rarely works. And yet we keep doing it. What's that Einstein quote about insanity? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So thinking that I want to change, I want this part of my life to be reborn, and I'm going to roll up my sleeves, I'm going to buy the best book, and I'm going to make it happen, I'm going to get to work. Right? But it doesn't work. What if this year we said instead, not on my own? Not on my own. I want to change. I want to be made new. I want to be reborn, but I'm not going to do it on my own. To me, verse 13 and this last little point here is like the best news in the world. Because what I think God is saying to us in this verse is that this idea of being made new, it's not on you. Think about that for a second. The power to change is something you do not need to manufacture. God says, I will give you that power. The actual transformation of your heart and soul, the renewing of your mind, I'll do that, God says. I'll do that part. What we are responsible for are these things up here. These are our jobs. To believe our responsibilities, to have confidence in Jesus, to rest in our identity, and to grab hold tight. Our job is not to make it happen on our own. Roll up our sleeves and get to work. I mean, there is something for us to do here. But change comes, a rebirth happens when we realize that we can't do it on our own. So let me ask you, do you have any resolutions? Any changes you hope to make this year? Anything you'd like to see transformed in your life? If so, is your plan to do it on your own? That would be mine, by the way. God is inviting us to something different. To trust in Him. To hold on tight to Him. To rest in our identity. And in doing so, be born again. Let me read to you this verse from Romans 8:29, and then we'll have communion together. You just listen to this. It's not up on the screen or anything. Might be a good passage to study this week. Romans 8:29 says that, "For God knew His people in advance, and He chose them to become like His Son." God chose you, is determined to see you become like His Son in character, in depth, and in ability. And we get to do that. We get to experience that change as we have confidence that Jesus will do it, as we rest in our identity, as we receive and grab hold of Him, and as we stop trying to do it on our own. There is hope this new year, and not because it's January 1, but because God is with us. And God can be trusted to make us new. This meal is going to today remind us of all these things. You know, as you